So, thank you for listening to the recording. Hopefully, I can do a reasonable job of substituting for us not having in-person lecture today. So, last time, we were discussing file descriptors, and we mentioned this idea that each process has its file descriptors as this array, and this was an array of pointers that pointed to our open file descriptions, meaning the actual information about what file or pipe or other resource we were accessing and where we were in that and whether we were reading or writing and so on. And we mentioned that this let us, you know, move these pointers around and copy these pointers. And we have this dupe to operation that let us take a pointer that was in one entry of our array and copy it to another. And this meant we could have two file descriptors that would refer to the same open file description. And our primary use for this was redirection, that we could implement some command and we could change where its output went, because its output went to a particular file descriptor, we could set that particular file descriptor to go any particular place. We also mentioned that, well, if we have multiple pointers to the same open file description, then we have to kind of rethink about what close is doing. And we learned that close kind of nulls that out, and when there's no more pointers to an open file description, that's when it actually gets deallocated. And then we talked about a particular, very useful, special type of file called a pipe. And our big use case for this is that we could have one command's output become the other command's input. It's not the only use of these pipes, but probably the most common. You know, we could simulate this with a regular file by having command one's output go to a file on disk and then having command two read from that file on disk. But instead, we can have these pipes where we avoid that intermediate file and just have the operating system kind of keep just the minimal data that command one has written and command two hasn't read, rather than us storing everything and then processing it later. And we learned that the way we get pipes is we call this pipe library call that gives us two file descriptors, one of which lets us write, the other of which lets us read. So I noticed, speaking about pipes and multiple files, that there was some confusion on the quiz, particularly question three. So question three was talking about this scenario where we had a parent process create a pipe and fork two child processes, each of which reads one character from that pipe and copies it to standard out. And we said that one output that was possible was CBA. And this was maybe not intuitive because our parent process output C and sent AB to the pipe, and the child would therefore need to somehow output B before A, even though that's not the order those characters went into the pipe. But a way this can happen is because the two child processes are executing independently, and our operating system might end up sort of interleaving them, we can have this scenario where one of the childs reads the A from the pipe and the other reads the B, and the one that reads the B is the first one that gets a chance to write to standard out. And there's a similar scenario in some other options on question three, which you can explain in this kind of way. I think the big thing people were probably missing is that, oh, wait a moment, you know, we can have this second child kind of execute in between when the other one reads and writes. And this is probably especially true if we're thinking about multiple cores, so where child one here might be running on one core and child two running on another core. There's lots of opportunities for them to get mixed up. Okay, so that's all about file descriptors. And our main topic for today is going to be a new one that we introduced briefly at the end of last lecture, which is virtual memory. And we talked about this idea that, well, our programs have this view that they own the entire memory of the system. And we're going to see that the way this is implemented is we have a mapping where the operating system, when it's running each process, kind of tells the hardware, hey, I'd like this process, when it accesses an address, to go to this real address. And this means that the processes are going to be dealing with what we'll call virtual addresses. And the real memory addresses are going to be different than that. And we'll learn that we're going to call these real memory addresses physical addresses. And we're going to talk a lot over the next several classes about the exact format that this mapping is going to take. And to do that, I'm going to use kind of a toy example. And my toy example, to keep things nice and simple, I'm going to say that the memory addresses our program can access for our toy example are going to be 10 bits. And there's a lot of ways we could choose to divide up this space, and I'm arbitrarily going to choose that we're going to use the bottom quarter of our space to store our code. We're going to use the next quarter of our space to store our constants and our heap. We're going to have the next quarter reserved if we need to expand that heap, otherwise we'll start it empty, and we'll have our stack at the highest addresses. So this is just a layout I have chosen for our program. We could have chosen something else. And it conveniently divides our addresses into equal chunks. And we'll see that this is going to be also how our mapping ends up working. And I'm going to call each of these equal chunks a virtual page. So I'm going to say it's virtual because we're going to see that these addresses are virtual. They're what the program sees, but they're not the real addresses the machine's going to use. And I'm going to number them starting with 0. And I've chosen very deliberately how I'm numbering them and how I divided up these into a 4 parts and not some other number. And what I've done is I've chosen that these pages are a fixed size that's a power of 2. In this case, I've chosen them to be 2^8 bytes. So we have these virtual pages, these program chunks of memory that are a fixed size that we call a page. So this page size we've chosen is 2^8. And because I chose 2^8, this numbering I'm using here, where I'm saying the bottom quarter is 0, the next quarter is 1, well, it's actually really easy to look at an address and say, what page is it in? We look at the upper bits, that's going to tell us. Why does that work? Well, if we think of taking an address and dividing it by 2^8, that operation is the same as shifting x over by 8 or removing the bottom 8 bits. So by choosing my page size, the size for these equal chunks of memory, to be a power of 2, I made it really easy to find the numbering starting with 0 for them. And we're going to really take advantage of this to make our hardware fast for figuring out what page things are in. And that's going to be important because we're going to use these page numbers to implement our mapping. And we've seen that this mapping applies to everything our program accesses. So we need to look things up all the time. And it's really important that that's as fast as possible. Now, that stuff we discarded to get the page number, we're going to need to use that too. And we're going to have a special name for that. So we're calling these upper bits the page number. So we're going to call the rest the page offset. And where that name comes from is if I think of my code here, at the bottom of my code, this is here, this is a low page offset. And at the top, I have a higher page offset all the way up to the maximum value. So the page offset tells us where in this chunk of memory are we. And what we're going to end up doing is we're going to map one of these virtual pages to a physical page, namely a chunk of memory of the same size, but with real addresses. And when we do that, we're going to keep the page offset the same. That is, if I have an address that's at the beginning of my page in these virtual addresses, the ones the program sees, it's still going to be at the beginning of the page in the physical addresses. It's just going to be a different page location where that chunk of memory starts. And we'll see an example of this on the next slide. So now that we've divided up our addresses into these virtual pages, let's do what I promised and map these virtual pages to physical pages. So we have our virtual addresses, the ones our program sees, that have kind of meaning to the program. And in this example, I'm going to say we have more physical addresses. This is not always going to be the case, but you know, this is one possibility. And I've divided up the physical addresses, that is the real memory, into chunks of the same size. So I chose that my virtual pages were 2 to the 8, my physical pages, that the real chunks of memory, are going to be the same size. I don't want to waste any space. So that's what I'm going to use. And just like I could look at the upper bits of my virtual addresses to decide the page number. So this was 0, this was 1, this is 2, this is 3. The same thing is going to be true of my physical addresses, that I can look at the upper bits of the physical address and see the physical page number. And what I'm going to do to set up my program's memory, I need to assign all the things it's accessing physical addresses. Well, I'm going to, take each of these pages that the program needs to access and assign them to one of the pages of real addresses. So here is an example of how I might do that. So I've said that virtual page 0 here goes to physical page 2. Virtual page 1 goes to physical page 7. And virtual page 3 goes to physical page 0. And I've decided not to have any mapping for virtual page 2. And why did I not have any mapping? Well, if we go back to our previous slide, I said that this started empty. So it starts empty. We don't really need to have any mapping for it. So this is the sort of layout I've chosen for my program's memory. So when the program tries to access something, in this chunk of memory, it's actually going to go to the corresponding location in physical page 2, and it tries to access something in our virtual page 3, it's going to go to the corresponding location in physical page 0. Now, this is something the OS needs to communicate to the hardware. And we can't really have the OS and the hardware this picture. It's not a way our hardware supports communicating. So we're instead going to have a table that the OS fills in. And we'll have an entry in this table for all the virtual pages the program could access. And we'll tell the hardware what the corresponding physical page is. And this table is going to be called our page table. And this is the form that our mapping or address mapping, that thing we use for address translation, takes on modern machines. So that we have an entry for each possible virtual page telling us what the physical page number is, and as we'll learn later, some extra information. And this is what the operating system is going to give to the hardware when it's running a process. So the hardware is going to say, oh, you're trying to access address 01100000. That's virtual page 01. I'm going to go to physical page 111. So we'll look exactly how that looks on the next slide. So you can see here we have our virtual addresses, the program addresses being mapped to our physical addresses, you know, in these chunks of that we call pages. So these pages are serving as a way to avoid, you know, specifying every particular address. We just specify these relatively big chunks. And that's going to make things more manageable. In particular, it makes the size of this table a lot better than if we, you know, specified each byte individually. So I mentioned we're giving the hardware this table. Let's talk about, you know, what the hardware does with this table exactly. So we have this table, and one problem we have to solve before we, you know, have the hardware actually use the table is I had an entry I labeled none, and none's not a number. And we can't write like zero for null because zero means physical page zero over here. So I need something way to write none. So what we're going to do to solve that problem is we're going to add what we call a valid bit. And we're going to put a one in cases where this row of the table, we have a mapping, and a zero where we don't. So in this case, we don't have a mapping for virtual page 2 because there's no memory the program has allocated there. And for every entry that's valid, we're going to have a physical page that lets us, you know where the data actually is. And this table is going to be used by the processor every time the program accesses memory. So we're going to have an address the program is trying to use, and we need to look it up in this table. And we learned that we've chosen our page size to be a power of 2. In this running example, we have it being 2 to the 8 bytes. So that means the bottom 8 bits of our address are our page offset. So this is our page offset, and this is, you know, this is 8 bits because pages are 2 to the 8 bytes. So we're going to take that page offset and we're just going to save it for later when we're doing the translation. The part we really care about is the page number, which tells us which row of the table we want to look up. And in this example, once we've stripped off our page offset, our page number is 1. So we're going to go to the row for virtual page 1. And we're going to retrieve what we call a page table entry. I'll sometimes abbreviate this PTE. And this tells us the information for a particular virtual page. So we're going to extract that row from the table, and we're going to look at two parts of it. So one thing we're going to look at is this valid bit. We want to say, is there anything there at all? And if there's not, well, the hardware doesn't really know what to do. We're going to have to ask the OS for some help. And how do we ask the OS for help? Well, we run an exception handler in the OS So that's why I have this trigger exception of zero operation. So if the row we looked up was the one for two, well, we can't use the physical page number there. We have to tell the OS, hey, do something about this. In this case, that's not going to happen. So we're going to get physical page number 111, and we're going to form a new address. And this is going to be our physical address, the one that actually is valid in the real memory. And the upper bits of that address are going to be our physical page number that we get from this table. But we still need to fill in the rest of the address, and we're going to do that by copying our page offset exactly as is. And so what we have happening is we're taking our virtual page number and using the table to convert that to a physical page number and copying the page offset, which stays the same between our original address, which we call the virtual address, and the real address, which we call the physical address. Now, something to note about what I'm showing in this table here is that I said that, you know, if we were looking up the row for 2 here, we get invalid, and that would trigger an exception. And I have question marks in the physical page, but this is actually going to be, you know, storage that contains bits. It doesn't contain question marks, so there's going to be a number here. I'm just not using it. So I wrote it as question marks on this slide, but in reality, the operating system's going to put something there, and the processor is just going to ignore it. Okay, so we've seen this toy lookup, and we'll go through some probably more examples with it. Now I like to talk a little about, like, how is this going to look when we extend it to kind of real systems where, well, you know, probably our pointers are a little more than 10 bits. And to talk about that, I want you to talk about kind of some issues that, you know, make this a little less intuitive than it might be. And one thing is that I've given us the impression that if we have pointers of a certain size, the whole pointer is used for the lookup. But this is not actually typically the case today. So one way this can happen is that on our x86-64 system, pointers are 64 bits. So we have our pointer that is 64 bits. And so what you'd think would happen is we'd divide this 64-bit pointer into a page offset and a page number, and that would be it. But actually what the designers of x86-64 have chosen to do is that they've made the page number be only some of the address, and some of it is unused. And the reason they chose to do this is that even with some tricks we're going to use later, these page tables are pretty big, and, you know, and we don't really have enough space to store the page tables efficiently that would work for a really, really big page number. So in x86-64, typically what we end up with is that this page offset is going to be 12 bits, and this page number is going to be 36 bits. And then we have a bunch of unused space at the top. And often I'm going to talk about the size of virtual addresses. And when I talk about the size of virtual addresses, I am talking about this size. This is the virtual address size. That's the size we actually use for the lookup. So that's just me being clear about terminology we're going to use and terminology you'll likely see in various places. Talk about the virtual address size. What do they mean? They mean the size that's actually used, and often the pointers will have extra stuff that's not used, probably because, well, it's really awkward to have a 48-bit pointer, but they don't really need all those bits to support the system they want to support. And there's a term you're going to hear, and we're going to use, about address space sizes. That's the amount of stuff we can address. So if I have a 32-bit virtual address, I can name 2 to the 32 individual bytes usefully. And so you'll hear people say that a system with a 32-bit virtual address has a 2 to the 32 byte virtual address space. And we'll say the same for the physical, for the real addresses. If I have a 20-bit physical address, I have a 2 to the 20-bit physical address space. I can name 2 to the 20 real memory locations. Now, where this gets complicated is, well, what machines don't always have a power of 2 amount of memory. So what happens if I have a machine with 3 gigs of RAM? So 3 gigs, you know, so 2 gigs, if we're assuming I'm using power of 2 as gigabyte, that's going to be 2 to the 31. And 4 gigs, or I should write that so it looks clearly like A. G is going to be 2 to the 32. So 3 gigs is not a power of 2. How can we have our physical address space match that? Well, we can't. We'll stay. Now, if we have 32-bit physical addresses, we'll say we have a 2 to the 32 byte physical address space, even if, you know, a gigabyte of those addresses aren't useful. And this is by far the most common situation on real machines, that the physical address space is the number of potential memory addresses once we get past our translation, but we might not have the actual memory installed, you know, to make all of those addresses useful. And that's fine, but we're still going to say the machine has a physical address space of that size. So in the case of our machine with 3 gigs of memory, it has a bigger physical address space. It's just that not all of those addresses are actually useful. But we can still generate them with our page tables. It's just if we try to use them, they're not going to work. Okay, so now that we've gotten past a bit of this terminology stuff, let's look at, you know, going beyond our toy example and thinking about what do addresses look like with kind of more realistic sizes. And I'm not going to jump all the way to 64-bit systems. We're going to start with a typical, you know, old 32-bit system. Let's say we have 32-bit virtual addresses. So our programs use 32-bit addresses, and all of those bits are meaningful. And we use pages of 4,096 bytes, or 2 to the 12 bytes. And I've chosen this number 4,096 very deliberately because this is the most common page size on x86. So, my first question is, how many virtual pages do we have? And I encourage you to pause and try to come up with the answer before I go over it. Okay, so let's think about how many virtual pages we have. So there's a couple of ways I can think of solving this. So one is that we could use the concept of virtual address space, the number of bytes we can name. With 32-bit addresses, we can name 2 to the 32 bytes. And those 2 to the 32 bytes are in chunks of 2 to the 12 bytes. So we can do the computation, 2 to the 32 bytes total divided by 2 to the 12 bytes per page, and this will give us 2 to the 20 pages. Another computation we could do is we could say, okay, if we have 2 to the 12 bytes, this means that our page offset is 12 bits. That we need 12 bits to determine where in a page we are. Another way we can think about this is that we go from 0 to 4,095, and 4,095 is 12 ones in base 2. So we need 12 bits to give our page offset. So our virtual addresses, which are 32 bits, we think of how they're laid out. Well, our bottom 12 bits is going to be our page offset. And the top bits are going to be our virtual page number. And that means that our page offset is 12 bits, and we have 20 bits left over, so our virtual page number is 20 bits. So we have virtual page numbers ranging from, 0 to 0 up to 20 ones. So that's 2 to the 20 possible numbers. So 20-bit numbers implies 2 to the 20 possible pages, possible values. So that's the number of virtual pages we get. So that's a number way of getting the same answer. We have 2 to the 20 possible virtual pages. Okay, so this is describing the situation on typical actual 32-bit x86, because I told you, well, this is the common page size, and 32-bit x86 has 32-bit virtual addresses. They use all the bits of the address. So let's go on to talk about what the page tables might look like. And use kind of a typical founding scenario, that might match that sort of machine. So let's say we have 32-bit virtual addresses, and our physical addresses, the real ones, are a little smaller. We have the same page size, and we have page table entries that have a physical page number and a valid bit, and and we can just discard that, which I need to edit in the slides later. So our question here is, how big is the page two? So I encourage you to work through this yourself. As a hint, what I would recommend doing is we have kind of two dimensions for our table. You know, we have one dimension, which is the number of virtual pages, and the other dimension, which is the size of an entry. And we've told you what entries contain, so you just need to figure out how big those two things are. And for this question, we're going to assume the page tables look like the ones we've seen, where they have a row for each virtual page. As you'll see from the answer to this question, probably that's not what we're actually doing in this case. And we're going to talk about that, you know, in a few classes, exactly what the sort of workaround for that is. But let's just work through, well, if we use the simple strategy we've seen so far, what this page table would look like, how big it would be. You know, I encourage you to pause and work through this problem. Okay. So, I'll solve this problem by first solving the easy part, which is the easy because we just did it, the number of virtual pages. We learned on the previous slide that this was 2 to the 20. Okay, done. Just using what we did before. So then we need to figure out how big are our entries. Well, if we have 30-bit physical addresses, we know those 30-bit addresses are going to be, we're going to have 30 bits. And the bottom 12 bits are going to be our page offset. And that size is the same with our virtual and physical addresses because it, you know, is determined by the page size, which never changes, you know, between the two. And that means we have 18 bits left over for our physical page number, which I'll abbreviate PPN. So that means we're going to need 18 for bits for our physical page number. Plus one bit for the one valid bit. And so if we think of our table here, we have an entry where we have a valid bit, and then we have a physical page number. And we have a bunch of these, and what we're going to do is we're going to take our virtual address, which we're going to divide up into our two pieces. We're going to take our virtual page number, select a row, use the physical page number to form a physical address with the original page offset. So how big is our page table? Well, we have our size of entry was 19 bits. Our number of rows was 2 to the 20. So we end up with 2 to the 20 times 19 bits. This is, you know, going to be about, you know, a little over 3 megabytes. So this is actually going to be a problem. You know, it's a little difficult to store this much. In particular, like, we're not going to have storage on our processor for this much, you know, and we're definitely going to need to come up with a better solution to deal with, you know, when we change from 32 bits to 48 bits. So we're going to talk about that a bunch later. We're first going to introduce, like, a big idea we're going to use to store this, which is that, you know, the preview is we're going to put it in memory. Okay, so we've talked a bit how big page tables are, and I alluded to that, well, we'll have our address split into a page offset and a page number. So let's do a little exercise with splitting this address up. And I encourage you to pause and work through this problem. And before I go over my solution. Okay, so let's look at this case here. We have a page that is 2 to the 12 bytes, and I want to split this address up into a page number and page offset. And one thing I often have as a question with something like this is people will go like, wait a moment, don't we need to know how big the addresses are to know how big the page number is and the page offset is? We can avoid that because we know, no matter how big the addresses are, that the way it's going to work is we're going to have a page offset in the lower bits and the rest is going to be our page number. So we don't actually need to know how big the address is as long as we can figure out where the page offset is. And in this case, well, we know the page offset is going to be 12 bits because we have 2 to the 12 byte pages. So we need 12 bits to determine which byte of the page we're at. And everything left over, once we strip that off, is the page number. Now, one way you could work through this, once we know that, is you could say, okay, we're going to convert this whole thing to binary. So we have 0001, that's this part, 0010011, 0100, and we could keep going. And then you could find the bottom 12 bits and find the upper bits. This is indeed a way you can solve this. There is a trick we can use, which is that we know that our address is, when written as hex, we have 4-bit parts. So this here is 12 bits. And that's exactly the chunk we want to get our page offset. So our page offset is going to be 0x78, and everything left over is going to be our page number. Now, if we weren't so lucky to have our page size be a multiple of 4 number in the 2 to the 4 times something, then we would possibly have to resort to this strategy. And that will happen sometimes. Not every system chooses 2 to the 12. When we think about like page table sizes, you might think that's a little actually small, maybe. Maybe we should have bigger pages. But for 2 to the 12, this trick works. And for 2 to the 8 and 2 to the 16. Otherwise, it's going to be a little extra effort. So we'll have to, we can write out this whole thing. 1, 0, 1, 0, 1, 0, 0, 1, 1, 0, 0, and we can say, oh, this is our page offset, this is our page number, get them as binary, and then we can convert that back into hex and get the same answer that way. Okay, so that's my answer for that. And as a second little exercise, let's do this lookup here, which is probably very similar to what we might do on a quiz. So, in this example, I have 64 byte pages, and 64 is 2 to the 6, and that means I have 6-bit page offsets, and let's say I have 9-bit virtual addresses, so that means my virtual addresses consist of a 3-bit virtual page number and the 6-bit page offset, and I want to convert this to my physical addresses. And I have the contents of my page table written out here. Presumably only this part would be stored. And I have dashes written, but presumably we have some number there, but we're going to ignore it because this entry isn't valid. And my question here is, I have this virtual address. What's the physical address? So you can pause and see if you get your answer. And I'll work through it now. So we have this virtual address, and note that I've written this virtual address out in hex, and, you know, there's no way of me writing it in hex where if you just convert each hex digit to binary that you'll end up with 9 bits if you not pay attention. This is something that a lot of people have trouble with. That's why I'm emphasizing it. So just be careful, you know, if our address size is not a multiple of 4 bits, that means that, you know, inevitably when we write things out in hex, they're not gonna like have a matching number of bits. And even if it is a multiple, you know, I could have written this address 0x24 and it doesn't change anything. You have to like remember, you know, use the right number of bits for the address size, you know, even if we aren't writing out all the leading zeros or writing extra leading zeros. So in this example, I've conveniently converted the address on the slide to binary with the appropriate number of bits. And we know we want the bottom 6 bits for our page offset. So this is our page offset. And that means this upper part is our virtual page number. So we're going to look up the virtual page number, and we're going to find that our resulting address is going to have a physical page number of 0010. So our resulting physical address, well, it's like our virtual address, it's going to be composed of two parts. It's going to be composed of a page number, which is a physical page number, and a page offset. And we've just learned, we looked up 000, the physical page number is 0010, and our page offset is 100100. So this binary is our physical address. And maybe for convenience, I can convert it back to hexadecimal. So if I do that, the least significant hexadecimal nibble is going to be a 4. And then we have 1010, which it should be an A. And then we have A0. So I get 0x0A4. Okay. So now that we know kind of the basics of how our page table lookup works, let's talk about a few extra things we want in our page tables, and also about what happens when we go to a page table entry and nothing's there. So let's talk about extra things. So a common scenario we have on kind of a system like Portal is like, I might be running, say, Vim, and you might be running Vim, and we'd really like, in this scenario, to not have two copies of the code for Vim. And, well, this seems pretty straightforward to do with page tables, because we can have a page table for MST3K's copy of Vim that points to physical addresses that contain the code and constants for Vim. And we can have a page table for XYZ for W's copy of Vim that points to the same physical addresses for the code and constants, but different stuff for the stack and all the heap. And so the two copies, you know, share the code and data. We save a bunch of space, but they're still independent because all their actual, like, working data is different. Seems great. But there's a problem with this idea. And the big problem with this idea is, you know, like, bugs. So it could be the case that, you know, there's a bug in Vim, and occasionally it tries to modify its code. And normally, this is not really a concern for us because, you know, it's only going to crash that copy of Vim. But our goal in having address translation was that, you know, each program kind of thought it had independent memory. And if this is the case, well, now you notice it's not independent. That when I crash Vim, I crash your Vim too. And we don't want that. But we still want to do this trick where if we have two copies of the same code, we only load one of them. It's very useful because, well, I'm showing us doing it for Vim, but we can also do it for, like, the C library. And so to enable this, you know, we're going to add some extra columns to our page table with what we'll call permission bits. And these will be kind of like the permission bits we have on files. So we'll indicate, can a program using this page table entry, you know, write to this memory? Can it execute code from this memory? And commonly we'll also have, can it access it in user mode? And basically, in addition to checking the valid bit, we'll actually check all these other bits. So we'll amend our page table lookup process to add this sort of permissions, and we'll have a trigger exception if these, you know, if these don't match the access. So if the program's trying to write and the permissions say you can't do that, we'll also trigger an exception. So this is something our page table entries will have, and that's really useful. And that's also going to explain sort of what's going on in this memory up here. That I told you in our diagram, oh, like, we have this upper part of memory that's reserved for the OS. What's going on with that? Well, that's where the operating system, the kernel, is storing its information, and it can just store that in that part of the address space and not worry about the program accessing it, because it's going to mark it as, you know, not user accessible. So we'll have this feature taking advantage of all the time. So on sort of one thing we do to make these page tables a lot more useful is that we have these permissions. So not only do we specify what memory the program can access, we specify what it can do with that memory and whether it can access that memory, you know, only in the kernel or in general. Now, I mentioned that in either case, that if something is invalid or if these permission bits don't work, we're going to run an exception handler when the program tries to access it. And this makes sense because the hardware, you know, can't handle that itself. But so far, it seems like the reason we're running that exception handler is to print out that friendly segmentation fault message to our terminal. But there's actually things we can do besides that. And I'll give, you know, as our last topic for today, kind of a basic introduction to kind of a trick we can do with that. And to motivate that, first let's talk about kind of our program layout. That we mentioned we have like our data, we have our global variables, we have our heap, and then we have a stack. And I'm showing the stack as a box, but there's a real question of like, how big is this box? So for a lot of programs, we don't do very much with the stack. But, you know, sometimes I'm writing a program which like runs, you know, really recursive Fibonacci or Ackermann or something else that uses a ton of stack space. So if we're going to handle those programs that use a ton of stack space, it sounds like what the operating system is going to end up doing is that we're going to allocate this huge amount of stack space just in case it's one of these really recursive programs. And almost all the time, we're going to use not much of it. So in this example, I'm seeing we have 4 kilobyte pages. So, you know, typically our program uses 12 kilobytes, but I just have to worry that we have the super recursive function and we need like a megabyte. And we'd really like to avoid this. And page tables give us this trick for avoiding it. And it lets us, as this sort of title of the slide alludes to, only allocate space if needed, only on demand. So how do we implement this idea and why do page tables let us do it? And we're going to take advantage of the valid bit. So what we're going to do is we're going to not allocate space for the whole stack that we've given the program. So in this example, our stack pointer is pointing to virtual page 7FFFC, and that is allocated to a physical page in our page table. But if we push something onto the stack, well, we're out of space. We didn't allocate that space. And what we think would normally happen is we'd say, oh, well, when the program tries to decrement this stack pointer and access the virtual page before it, it's invalid. That's going to trigger an exception, and we'll get that segmentation fault message. But the code that would, you know, trigger the program being killed and therefore eventually resulting in our segmentation fault message, it doesn't need to do that. So what we can do instead is we can let the program run an instruction that triggers an exception. And, you know, that's going to have the hardware run the exception handler in the OS. And rather than sending the segfault signal to the program, the OS can say, oh, okay, so this program was accessing address 7FFFBFF8. That's where I told the program its stack was. So why don't I just fix up this page table entry here and make sure the program now has more space for its stack? So we can set that up. And we can then go back to the program. And the hardware, when we go back to the program, is going to retry this push instruction. And this time, this push instruction's going to access memory on virtual page 7FFFB. The hardware's going to look up the corresponding physical page number and say, oh, it's valid. I can do that. And just keep running the program as if this space was already allocated. So from the perspective of this program, what's happening here is just that, you know, we were trying to use more stack space, and it worked. Under the hood, it was a little slow because we had to run the OS, you know, and restart the instruction, but as far as the program's concerned, it's like we allocated the perfect amount of stack space for it. But what we actually did is we guessed how much stack space it would need initially and didn't allocate that, you know, the extra space until the program proved it was actually going to use it. And this strategy, you know, we see the attraction for stack space in that, well, if the program never ends up using the remaining space, this allows us to never allocate it. Save some time, save some memory. And this trick is used actually a lot in real OSs. And it's used not just for stack space, but also for loading the program. Why would we use this for loading the program? Well, this means that we can only load the parts of the program it needs to start initially and start the program faster. Yes, you know, when the program actually needs extra stuff that we didn't load in our sort of initial set, that's going to mean it's going to run the OS. The OS is going to have to say, oh gosh, you're trying to access this thing that, you know, I should have loaded that. Let me do it now. But we can have this strategy where rather than when we start a program, we have to copy everything for the program into memory, we just record what should be in the memory and we load it as the program tries to access it. And this means that we start the program a lot faster. And this is usually what you care about, is you want to start the program faster. And it's okay if it runs a little slower, if, you know, it has that nice responsiveness of starting faster. And also, if the program doesn't allocate something or doesn't access some things that would normally be loaded, well, we never load them and we save time. So this strategy is actually what most OSs use for actually loading programs, is that, you know, it doesn't sort of have the whole program loaded in advance. Instead, we record what should be in the memory, you know, and if it's not loaded yet, that's fine. We still start running the program, and if the program tries to access something that isn't loaded, we fix it at that time. And we can do that because of this idea that when something's not there, the hardware will run the OS and say, hey, program couldn't access this. What do you want to do about this? And the OS doesn't need to say, get rid of the program. It can just, you know, fix that up and keep the program going. So that's where we'll finish up for today, probably. And we'll talk about and review this all next time.